to...
I was torn because on the one hand, there is a movie I've seen before, mm-hmm. and we're going to once again go on the journey of, did this movie age well?
Mm, yeah.
And I thought about a couple other options, like The Grudge. I don't know if you guys have heard of that mm-hmm. one.
Yep.
And it's a Japanese film, I think.
I think that one was Asian inspiration. Shit out of Josh.
I mean, it was a unique kind of spooky, but then I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes, and it mm-hmm. was like, it got a 38.
Yeah, but horror movies in general don't always get good ratings.
That's
even if they
horror
are
movies
good.
In general are bad.
Well, then because you brought up The Grudge, I really kind of want to pick the movie where... So The Grudge is... There's an American version of it, and there's the Japanese version of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I watched the one that came out a lot longer ago.
Right.
The very
is
first
that the one,
one
where she like crawls out the TV or something like
that's
that?
That's The Ring, and the
well,
bad guys...
The Grudge isn't all that different.
It's not... They're both Japanese horror in a very similar
and there's
vein.
A girl with long hair that does a lot of crawling.
Correct. But there is a movie where the girl from The Grudge fought the girl from The Ring like it was Freddy versus Jason. And that's a
what?
Real thing that actually happened.
Well, this wasn't a YouTube
at each
video?
Other?
they like rip each other apart. Like one of them uses their hair as her weapon to like pull stuff and the other one's just like an immortal monster thing. So it's real fucked up.
Huh.
But it's real dumb too. So... One day maybe we'll just do like The Ring, The Grudge, and The Grudge versus The Ring. That
no, I won't be here for that. I'll just leave.
It'd be like Alien versus Predator. It'll just wind up being a parody of both.
Exactly.
Except scary. Alien versus Predator ain't scary. It's just fun. It's just good, clean, wholesome fun.
It's not fun either.
It is fun.
It is not. It's kind of just the shittiest parts
depends
of every.
On what you're
every,
under the influence of.
If you are extremely drunk,
I'm
maybe
under
tolerable.
The influence of not being a stick in the mud. I'm under the influence of not having my head up my ass,
which is why
I can have fun watching bad movies.
If my head was up my ass, maybe I could enjoy Alien versus Predator more because I wouldn't have to actually watch it, and I'd be high on the fumes of my own
Rick,
ass.
If your head was any further up your ass, it would just pop back out and be your head again.
I am an horrible.
It's like Alien, where it's like your own head is coming out of your own mouth. Your head is so far up your own ass.
I'm an Ouroboros ass.
It's the I am my own grandpa of head up assery.
Right, exactly.
God. We must go deeper.
Speaking of that, the movie we're watching is kind of about that.
Speaking of going deeper, my name is Josh. I'm an analyst here in Nashville, and I like making body art.
I'm Rick Fox. I am an author here in Nashville, and I like caves.
I'm Caleb. I'm an analyst here in Nashville, and I like flashlights.
And we're opinionated. And tonight we're continuing the
scary month.
Scary month of May, but in October. We are really bad at picking these months.
The stupidest
name
we've ever picked, and we have always.
Why could we have not just been like?
Two.
And then not added on the electric spookaloo line, even though that was incredibly clever and we had a lot of fun saying electric spookaloo. Because now we've shot ourselves in the foot because we couldn't then go on to the next year and just say three. We had to come up with some other asinine thing to say. And now we're like 4 or 5 years into this and we're completely
Josh,
devoid of ideas.
Here's what we're going to do. Next year we're going to do October Months of Spooks 3, The Revenge, and we're done.
Let's just, no. You know what we do next year?
Because the best part is it's not actually three.
You know what we do next year? We do the soft reboot of October Month of Spooks. So it's just October Month of Spooks again.
Right.
And then from there, we've soft rebooted it and we can continue on into two and then three and then four.
It's a shame we won't remember this conversation next year.
I mean, it could just be Electric Spookaloo 2.
But that's...
Electric Spooka 2.
That's like fast, too fast, too furious, 2.
I mean, there's no right answer here, so why not?
The only right answer is let's talk about the movie we're actually here to talk
about.
Tonight
we're watching The Descent. The Descent came out in 2005. It currently has an 86 on Rotten Tomatoes. It was written and directed by Neil Marshall, and it stars Shauna McDonald, Natalie Mendoza, Alex Reed, Saskia Mulder, and many others.
A caving expedition goes horribly wrong as the explorers become trapped and ultimately pursued by a strange breed of predators. Not like the cool predator alien type thing.
Unfortunately.
It's just, you know, guys that are goblins. They fight goblins, I think,
in this
movie. It
could be cool if they were made at a predator horror movie, though.
Yeah. The original is a horror movie. It's
not
really
but it's not really horrifying.
I don't know. There's a lot of people that get skinned in that movie.
Remember the
but
time
it's more
it
like
came
you
out.
Find
remember the time it came out.
Body.
Right?
Okay.
it definitely has
at the time it came out when the android in that movie lost his head and milk came out.
You're thinking
sure
of Alien. That's a very different movie from Predator.
The same thing.
I thought we were talking about Alien.
No, we're talking about Predator.
Predator.
Oh.
Because they're pursued by a group of predators.
Oh, the first Predator movie is not a horror movie. Sorry. See? Sorry. Okay. You're correct. I thought you were talking about Alien.
Here's the thing. You've got Alien, you've got Aliens, and like there's a sliding scale where Alien is full on horror and Aliens is mostly action with some horror. And I think Predator slides right in the middle of those two, where Predator is like, it's definitely got action and they're playing with that, but the tropes are also tropes of horror as well. And it leans a little more than like full on action till the end where it gets pretty actiony. But even then, it's still a horror movie ending. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Predator. We're here to talk about The Descent. Have either of you guys seen The Descent?
Well, this is Caleb's pick.
This yeah. is.
I yes. went back and forth between whether or not to watch something new that looked interesting or something that was from my younger years, which I've seen before. Uh-huh. And the reason I chose this is because this is the most frightening movie I have ever seen.
Then why are we watching it tonight?
To inflict it upon you. It's the best part.
This is the worst.
And I'm curious if it still holds up because there's some,
I hope it fucking doesn't.
There are some moments where like some real dumb shit happens, and I'm sure that we're going to have fun talking about that afterwards.
I hope that you forgot about the scene where Bozo the Clown waddles in and just goes, and it's not scary at all and everyone has a good laugh.
I don't remember this movie being scary at all. Now, to be fair, I've only watched this movie once, and my scale of like scary at all is very different from most people. To give you some context, Caleb, we once did Hereditary on this podcast.
I've never even heard of that one.
It fucked me up for like 2 months.
It's really well known for being like horrifying to a lot of people.
It fucked me up for 2 months.
Okay.
I laughed through the entire ending. And I don't mean like I was chuckling to myself.
No, he was actually laughing while I'm over here like huddled under a couch cushion.
Right.
I'm holding his small dog, his small Westie, for comfort. I hate dogs.
And I'm laughing.
I just needed something to put between me and the TV for that shit ass movie.
And I'm laughing like this is the best comedy I've ever seen in my entire life. So like that should give you an idea of my scale. But my memory,
your scale, which is just
time.
Utterly messed up.
I hate this month. It's I hate this scary. Month so fucking much. Going and picking the scariest movie you remember. I genuinely hope that this is a case like last week where you remember it being a certain way because you were a teenager at the time. And then we go and we watch it now and it's like, it turns out it was all just like, Caleb was a teenager, right? It happens to all of us with like, any number of different movies that we watch. Yeah.
And it could be based off of the crew you're with. Like if there are some jokes, if you're with people that laugh at them, you'll find it hilarious. And if you're not with those people, you're just like, this is retarded.
Right. And that may be part of why I don't remember it as being that entertaining, because I watched it by myself and I remember being pretty sleepy when I did watch it. So like I probably wasn't giving it 100% attention. So
that's
like I'm excited to see what I think of it now, because I have just enough memory to be like, I remember this being interesting, but not scary. So I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's terrifying, because like seeing Josh pee himself is the best part of this month.
I hate this month.
Yeah, I figured it was going to get a horrible score because I don't remember it being a really great movie. Mm-hmm. I just remember it being scary.
Right.
And when I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes, the fact it's almost got a 90, I was just like, oh. Okay.
It's almost got
that doesn't bode well. That's usually like it's a scary movie and also a good plot line.
I love that. Normally
when it's a horror movie, if it's a good story but like not actually that scary, it'll still get rated lower because people are pissy that like they didn't get scared by it. The fact that this is highly rated is pissing me off.
It's highly rated by critics and the people that want to go see it.
Fuck the people that want to go see it. I'm not one of them.
I want to go see it. Let's go see it.
I hate you so much. I'm not even plugging your writing this time. If you want to support our podcast for some reason, even though we're half full of shitters on this podcast, you can support us on Patreon.
We can't be half full of shitters unless someone's half a shitter.
Yeah. We didn't even address that. Brian's supposed to be here, but he had some personal stuff come up. He had to step away. But yeah, if you want to support our podcast, we're on Patreon, patreon.com/opinionated. You can hear all sorts of bonus content, including listener requests and first impressions, all sorts of good stuff over there. Definitely go check it out, patreon.com/opinionated. Guys, we'll be back in just a minute after we're done watching The Descent. For some fucking reason.
Because it's October. That's when you watch.
I hate this month.
Okay. Give me a smile.
Gino, are you sure we're going the right way?
I've never been lost in my life.
There's only one way out of this chamber, and that's down the pipe.
saw someone. I saw someone.
No, you heard something and you saw what you wanted to see. It's the dark. It plays tricks on people.
Statistics, we're in the top 25% of podcasts for most of our episodes. So, yeah,
that's pretty good.
Eat your heart out, Joe Rogan.
Well, yeah, exactly. He's top, the point like top 0.05%
of podcasts.
And right. I just mean that like there's a whole lot of garbage podcasts.
It does there. Because the way the it's number
there's a lot of folks dragging the average down.
If you get over 72 downloads per episode in the first week of your podcast, you are in the top 25%.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Which we do. So we are.
Ever since I was exploring podcasts on Spotify and I saw one that was like someone had taken the hot concept of the Joe Rogan Experience and just like replaced it with their name. And the description of the podcast was that we listen to the podcast and then make commentary on it.
Oh. Commentary on the Joe Rogan podcast? Yes. Good Lord.
Like, what drivel?
No. There's no way I would listen to that.
No. I mean, what a stupid idea in the first place.
Uh-huh.
It was like, this is the React channel of podcasts.
I know.
A conversation about a conversation is the dumbest thing I can imagine. No. No, thank you.
It's so pathetically fanboyish.
Oh, Lord.
At least do good React, like React to movies.
Like react,
that's high class.
Reacting right. When you've got like a video to react to and you can watch the person reacting in real time to like moment to moment. I can get on board with that. Like there's at least a thing that you can see. And like,
it's overplayed. My favorite is reacting to reaction videos.
I'm just saying like either way, you yourself are watching the thing happen in real time also, so you are also reacting to it. So, like, you're kind of sharing in the experience with that person.
So, in this concept, if what Caleb described, if their podcast was them just replaying the Joe Rogan and then pausing to make commentary, would that be better for you, Rick?
Better, yes, because then at least, like, you've got, like, the specific context in the moment. Like, you don't have to pre-listen to Joe Rogan's like 3-hour long podcast
and then queue notes. Up
their like 6-hour long podcast because they got to react to every moment of the podcast.
Of course.
So like you've got a full day of...
yes, Bernie Sanders made a quite salient point to Tiger Woods on this part.
Right, right.
Well, maybe what we should do is we should start up a second podcast where we react to our first podcast.
To our own.
God.
I tell you what, it'd be better than watching this shit. I hated watching this movie. I knew that I would and boy was I right.
I will go ahead and say right now, this is not the movie that I thought it was. I'm pretty sure that the movie that I thought this was a different cave horror movie that came out around the same time called The Cavern.
It's kind of a subgenre.
The Descent, The Cave, and The Cavern all came out like around the same time. So like there's several movies in this genre.
This is like the Mother and Mama debacle.
It's sort of, yeah, exactly. It's more like the Ants versus
Bugs Life
thing that happened. Or what's the one, Deep Impact versus The Core or something like that? Like there's a lot of movies where
it was like Deep Impact versus Armageddon.
Yeah, that's the one. There's a lot of ones where like there's an oddly similar series of movies that all just happen to come out at the same time.
Which one can we release first?
I think based on what I was seeing that this is the best one, and it is certainly better than the movie I was thinking we were going to watch. So I will say that I can completely understand why, Caleb, you were like, this is the scariest movie I'd ever seen. Like, yeah, at the time, like this is not the movie I thought we were going to watch. Mm. If that movie had been the scariest movie you'd ever seen, I would have wondered if you had seen very many movies. But this was actually pretty well done, I would say. Like, there's some movies, Josh, where you're like, I'm so scared, wah! That I'm like, come on, dude, you're just being a pussy. But this one, I can definitely understand why you would be very freaked out by it, because it is pretty well made in most terms. I think it leans a little too heavy on the jump scares, and by the end of the movie, it's a little too, like, the real monster was us all along.
Not really.
Yeah, really.
No, at like, the end, the monsters are still the goblins.
No, but the goblins are only eating the last girl because they, like, she murdered her friend.
The monsters are still the goblins.
They're the bad guy the entire time.
Yeah, what are you talking about? There is, like, I made the joke, but there is no like, humans were the real monsters.
No, I think the real point of this movie is humans are the real monsters. Because, like, the two girls who last the longest besides the main girl and the Asian cheating girl.
Yeah, the two twins.
They both are like, oh, we're going to be real quiet while this guy's here. We can hear our friend in the distance yelling, fuck them though, they'll get eaten and we'll get away, it'll be fine. There's a lot of that in this movie, and then at the end it's very much like,
but it's not played as like, if we can escape and leave her behind because fuck her,
that's exactly what they say,
then we'll make like an extra 5% on the bottom line.
I don't need it to have like
a self-preservation thing. I don't need an innately human. That's not like
I don't need a anti-capitalism in there. I'm saying that like none of these characters except Juno are like actually in any way heroic, and they're just like all either dumbasses or murderers.
Self-preservation does not equate to humans are the real monsters the entire time.
Here's the thing.
I'll agree with you that the characters do blend together, especially when they have helmets on. It is almost impossible to tell them apart. Mm-hmm. And as such, it's just kind of like, okay, the unique characteristics of you don't really matter a whole lot anymore, especially once the monsters start coming out. It's just, oh, I'm scared, run away. And the only exception to that is Juno, who's swinging her pickaxe murder weapon.
Right. To your point, Josh, there are several points where this movie, like, a monster is imminently, like, currently attacking and someone does something cowardly. And in that moment, I would agree, that's self-preservation. That's not the moment I'm talking about. I'm talking about these two girls are huddled up together. There is, as far as they know, no monster near them in any way. And they're hearing their friend calling out their names, trying to find them so that she can help them. And she's like, fucker, that bitch is gonna die and we'll get away.
No, they're not saying like,
that's
fucker.
Almost exactly what the
I hope she eats shit and gets eaten by goblinoids. I hope they start at her toes.
She says specifically like, nah, it'll be fine. They'll eat her and we'll get away. I want to live.
No, she doesn't say that.
That's what she says.
No. What she said, they've just figured out that this is just after they figure out that these goblins hunt by sound, right?
Which so they're their friend quiet. Gino, we have no reason to think she knows.
Exactly. So she's screaming, and so they're not. So they can't like signal. They can't shout back to her. That's going to call the goblins over.
Could.
So all they say is like, you know, like, hey, better her than us.
No,
that's not the line.
That's not
that's
what.
That's not their line's not like, fuck her. She's a rotten bitch. I
it's
hope
not
she gets
said
eaten.
Like, man, I really do hope that Juno escapes.
No,
like,
it's said
I'm not gonna,
in
I'm
like
not gonna
a,
do anything to help her. Better us than her. That cheating bitch.
You're out of it. You're inventing story in your head that does not exist. When it comes to the goblins in this movie,
they go down like chumps.
Yes.
Well, but, except for when like they swing for someone's throat and actually make contact, and the
they're
jugular
incredibly
just spills
accurate.
Out.
Right. They're rogues. They either get the critical attack from the sneak attack from behind and get the double damage, or they get nothing at all and they die immediately in one hit.
But like talking about how scary they are, right?
Sure.
Because like you weren't really scared in the movie.
No.
You never are.
No.
There's like two types of scary goblins in this movie for me. There's the jump scare scary goblin.
Right.
Which, you know, you can see a lot of them coming, but of course
the music cuts out and it's real quiet for a long time.
The music cuts out and like they're looking around a corner. Right?
And the camera is like obviously cutting off angles that you can't see, but you would want to see to know if there's something like creeping up behind her.
Right.
But they also throw in the like, oh, it's a fake out. Oh, it's a double fake out.
Uh-huh.
Oh, what about this? Oh, that jump scare was her friend was there and she was safe all along. Here's the real scare, right? Like, so, but I hate I think one of the jump scares actually had made me like yelp.
I heard it was
the very first one when we actually catch full view of the goblins for the first time.
Yeah.
When...
It's the first jump scare goblin, not the first, like, she's kind of panning around and she sees one, like, lapping up some water off in the distance.
Yeah. Right. It turns out it's actually, like, standing amongst them and it was, like, a foot behind one of them.
Right. That one made me yell. I jumped and yelled and scared.
So how do you feel about how they introduced the goblins in general? They took a
scary
long time to
as
have
I
them.
Hate it.
They took a long time to actually have them playing a part in the film.
I like that. I like that the cave paintings aren't, like...
monstery.
Hey, here's all the gremlins. It's just like people used to live here, and then maybe we imply that they evolved into the little cave goblins.
You know, I don't
maybe
know
they
either
died
way.
To the cave goblins. We don't know. It's kind of ambiguous. It's a mystery.
There's a lot of possibilities there.
The movie, just from like a from watching this movie, the movie did a good job of pacing itself and slowly introducing them in a way where, because you get the buildup of tension initially from them getting, like, from this group of friends getting trapped in the cave.
Right.
The cave-in happening. You get a little tension coming from, like, the interpersonal conflicts that are happening there.
A little, but, like, I could
not
use
much.
More of that, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I guess.
Okay, so,
We'll get into the group in a minute.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
But you do get that slow buildup of tension through things that aren't the goblins at first.
Right.
And I think that helps.
Especially when they got to the ravine. That scene goes on forever, and the stress is just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's set up what's happening, right? So they've gotten trapped in this cave system. They find out one of their friends took them to the wrong cave system.
Right.
Trying to make it more of an adventure, but it's a really
dumb
mistake.
We're going to discover it together.
They get lost in there, and no one knows that they're in this cave system.
Right.
And then there's a cave in behind them, so they've got to find a new way out by exploring deeper into the cave.
Sure.
And they get to a incredibly deep, you know, they do the classic, like, toss a rock over the edge, and it's
right.
20 seconds before they hear anything.
Right.
So it's just incredibly deep.
And Gandalf calls there a fool of a toque.
You just see Gandalf falling when you look over. Right. He's still falling.
Even to this day.
Yeah. But it's a super wide chasm. In order to progress, they have to make it across, and they have to send someone to climb over. I don't know what the term for it is in climbing, but they're basically like... charting the path, right? As they're going, they're putting in the next hook to attach to.
Like,
there's not something there for them to secure.
And they take what look like egg beaters and just like stick them up into the ceiling.
Right.
And I'm supposed to believe that's actually going to hold someone's body weight.
I mean, I am going to I think I will go along with the idea of like, there is probably some kind of technology that we've created that is intended for that purpose. And
probably.
Holds long enough for you to like hammer something in and all that. I'll go along with it.
Not look like that.
No, it did not. It didn't look believable, but at the same time, that girl clearly had the finger strength to like hold herself up there.
Yeah.
And that would be equally unbelievable if I had not like seen people actually do that. So like, I'm willing to go along with the idea of like, okay, something's going on here that is probably at least analogous to something that exists in the real world. Mm. So I'll roll with it. I kind of want to back up just a little bit. Because I feel like this movie can be divided into like four sections. There's the initial, like, we are leading up to the cave section. Like, we're setting up that one of us has
all
lost.
Of the character interaction.
Right. We're setting up.
Well, we skipped over the part at the very beginning of the movie when the steel pipe goes through the guy's head.
We definitely did. And like, I feel like you almost can, because it's almost not that important.
He had one line before he has a pipe go through his brain.
Yeah.
The important part of this initial section is there's this group of a bunch of
friends.
There's like five or six women that are part of like an adventuring group. They get together every year and they like...
An adventuring group that is this five or six women and one girl's husband and daughter.
No, because he's not doing the whitewater rafting. He's sitting on the side waiting for his wife to finish
That's
so
fair.
They can drive home.
That's
right.
Fair. Yeah.
This is clearly like a girls group.
Right.
Right. And the opening scene of the movie, they're doing their whitewater rafting. And as they get out, the husband goes and helps his wife up. And she goes and like says hi to their kid.
Right.
And then as she's doing that, he also goes down and helps up Juno.
Right.
This other woman. And like, there's a little bit of sexual tension maybe. See one of the other friends look over disapprove. So you can like, the movie tells you something's going on between these two and it's not appropriate.
Right. Which is like, that's one of those things that you can do in movies where like in real life it would just be like, okay, he's just helping another person do these tasks.
Right.
Clearly all of these people are good friends. He probably knows her. Like,
Nah. He was helping her undo her life vest with those fuck me eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
Those fingers were a little too nimble.
So that's right. Oh, you've got some experience undoing life jacket clasps.
Right, yeah. But like, okay, so you've got, I want to like bring up the four sections. I do want to discuss this section at least a little bit. But you've kind of got like all of this stuff, which is the setup for the three characters that have personality and the other three characters who are there.
Yeah.
And you are, this entire section is pretty much everything up until the cave-in happens. Of like, okay, everything is fine, but clearly this is a horror movie, so things are going to get worse.
Mm.
And I like that there's that section, and then there is a section of we are trapped in a cave with no way out horror. There's no like supernatural elements. There's no like obvious like there are monsters in this cave elements in that like second section. And I like that.
They're kind of like when the Fellowship of the Ring is stuck in the mines of Moria.
Exactly.
We're just going to have a little snack and wait for air to tell us how to get out of here.
It feels like this movie could go in a direction of this is just a cave horror movie. Like, I was aware that there would be monsters in the movie, so I wasn't drawn in by that. But I do feel like if you went into this movie completely blind,
it's like 127 hours kind of.
Exactly.
Like,
you could expect that to be the case of like the horror is like slowly the obstacles that these women will run into will pick them off one by one. And then there is the next section, the next third of quarter of the movie is, okay, there are monsters hunting them, and they are still trying to kind of work together some, but shit's getting real, real fast. Mm. And the final section is, it's every man for themselves, let's murder everyone, fuck them all, fuck it, we're just going to kill everything.
Sure.
Blood and giant pools of blood, it's all just like, it's gone from very grounded horror to not at all even kind of grounded horror.
Well, and it's interesting because I feel like the parts in the cave where they're building tension, whether it's from all the crawly goblin monsters coming at them, the movie calls them crawlers. They're the orcs from Lord of the Rings.
They really are.
Like, it's like they reuse the makeup, honestly.
Yeah,
but the little goblin orc things, right?
Woman flesh in this movie.
There's the tension from them and from the... just from the natural danger of climbing through this cave when you're lost and trapped.
Right.
Is done really well. Not perfect, but really well.
It does an excellent job of building that claustrophobia that you would feel in a cave.
The issue is all of the, like, relationship stuff doesn't feel handled well.
No.
And it's at the very beginning, too, because it's one writer-director, right? Neil Marshall. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he's just, like, he's got the stuff he's good at, and then writing, like... interpersonal dialogue is not the part that he's good at.
Right.
Because at the very, like, it does the whole, we've seen, you know, okay, they do their little white rod of rafting at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then as Sarah gets into the car with her husband, who's clearly cheating on her, but she doesn't know it yet.
Right.
Like, oh, they start to talk and then they get in a car accident. Her husband and her son, or her husband and daughter die. Mm-hmm. And so then it's like, oh, she's super sad. And then it cuts to like 5 years later or something.
I think it's a year later.
Is it just one?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, like 1 year later. But
sure. A year later, and they meet up in this cabin together.
Mm-hmm.
And this cabin, none of their interactions with each other are believable either.
I mean, it could be worse.
This is
where they're trying to establish all of the characters simultaneously, and that's a difficult task to do in general.
It's hard to do, especially when you have a number of characters that look very similar, and their personality, like, one of the girls, like, one of her character traits is... good at climbing and has younger sister. And that's what we know about her.
Yep.
And we're supposed to care that she's like getting chased and killed and she's supposed to have all this like connection with the rest of the crew. And it's just like, I'm sorry, but you looking almost identical to our main character and your big personality thing being you've got a sister who's also here in the crew. Like, that is not enough for me to care about your character. And you make it, she makes it to be like the third to last one to die.
Right, for sure.
And maybe... like, for me, when they put all the helmets on, that's when they all bleed together, and whatever character development they've done for the ones I can't obviously tell who they are, like one of them's Asian, I hold on to that pretty well, and then she starts being a badass.
Mm-hmm.
But for the rest of them, I feel like if they had given them some kind of defining characteristic that I would see throughout the cave, like maybe one's got a big flashlight.
Right, right.
Or maybe one's got like a glow stick bracelet. Right.
You know
what
would be a great way to do that? Would be like they each, like maybe their headlamps are like tinted a different color. So you've got like slightly blue tinted headlamp,
right,
but
right.
Slightly green tinted. Yeah. It'd be a little goofy, but whatever.
Like, you don't know, outdoorsy gear sometimes has really loud colors on it. And
exactly.
Some of that is for survival
exactly.
purposes.
That would make the most sense, I think, is to give them all very specifically colored outfits. To me, the bigger issue, though, is that it's not just that they look similar. But there are three of these characters that basically don't have personalities to
right.
me. Like, you have our main character, And I only
our main character is Sarah. She's right. The one whose husband cheated on her, then died.
Right.
And she's really sad. And she has hallucinations about her husband and her daughter at random points. And then they die during her hallucinations and she wakes up scared.
And this is the thing about Sarah, is that she doesn't have a unique personality.
No.
She is the main character. And that's the only reason I remember her.
Right.
Right.
Like, and that's not good enough, I don't think. She needs to have like some specific traits going into this whole thing that are not, I'm traumatized from the death of my husband and child.
Well, and it's tough too, because when none of your characters have super strong character traits, you're
except
kinda,
for Juno.
Except for Juno. But you're almost forced to kind of reduce them to very surface level characteristics, right? Like,
like
there's
with
Holly, who we know is the, like, she's the adventurous one, but that's it. And so in my mind,
oh, right.
it's
Holly's
the,
not the
she's,
one that I'm thinking
she,
of.
No, Holly is the one who looks like
the,
a 90s
the
lesbian.
The short haircut.
Oh, okay. Then Holly is the one that I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but you couldn't remember, right?
No.
Then you've got Juno, who is
the leader
the badass,
of the group. Yeah.
And she's easy to tell apart from the other ones because she physically looks different, right?
Yeah.
All of the other ones are very, like, bread and butter white lady.
They're British white ladies. Like,
right. Well, Juno is not.
You could, I mean, this sounds weird to say, but when it comes to the fact her race makes her very distinct.
Stand out?
Yeah.
Why not just have a black character?
That would help
a lot. Or maybe
a lot.
Two of them. That would make those characters very distinct.
Sure.
Very.
Something like that. But, I mean, even more than that, they need to have distinct personalities. Because
yes.
Even like Holly, you say she's the adventurous one. I kind of just think she's the one that like just has short hair.
Like, and makes really dumb decisions because her adventurousness is shitting on the cave that they're going to see enough that Juno decides to change it to a different uncharted one.
Exactly.
And then when they get to that different uncharted one that no one knows about, Holly is the one that's just like, all right, I know that we're all lost here in this cave, but I'm just going to leave you all in my dust. See ya, bitches. And
I'm
like,
going to... Oh, no, a
off.
Hole.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to dive down this hole.
Who
and
could have
my
expected
legs.
Danger in an uncharted cave?
Mm-hmm. There's Beth.
We never did find out what the fuck was going on with the pretend daylight in that area, did we?
No.
What the shit?
I mean, it could have actually been just a little crack
sure.
that you can't climb out
but
of.
But we needed to see that. Like, she is very clearly distracted by what appears
to be
both
daylight.
Her and us as viewers to right. be daylight.
And Juno and, says, no, that's not daylight.
And we don't find out what the fuck that was.
They explain it away like, oh, it was a reflection.
Sure.
Of what?
I
good
need
question.
A reflection of light bouncing on something. Light from what? Bouncing off of what?
It's
so
like
what
The Legend
know.
Of Zelda where you got to get the daylight to bounce across all
it's
the mirrors.
It's a collection of mirrors that Juno had set up beforehand just to fuck with them.
Right.
Okay, then you've got Beth, who is the old one who dies via pick through her neck.
Right.
Okay,
who
right.
should die via pick through her neck.
Right, because, okay, I think we're just, this is one of those podcasts, we're just going to be scattered the entire way through. But like, what the fuck is this movie doing where it's like, okay, Beth is definitely dead because the injury that Juno accidentally gave her is clearly a fatal injury. Like, it is going through the direct back of her neck,
right.
out the front of her neck.
Her spine should be severed.
Let's try and keep it a little organized. Let's try and keep the structure of this a little organized. We've already talked about
the cave-in hasn't happened yet, so why don't we go back
to
that?
The cave-in is probably the highest moment of tension for me.
They get into the cave. They find out, they go exploring, and they're trying to wiggle through like some tight spots, as happens in Spelunking.
Right, this is the part, like, they had stopped to have a snack. They have just figured out that they're lost.
Not quite, because...
You're right. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, Sarah,
the cave-in happens
Sarah
just prior
our main
to the
character, snack. Who's been having all this anxiety ever since her kid died and her husband died. She's trying to wiggle through a tight spot that the rest of the crew has already made it through, so she's the last one to get through, and she starts having a panic attack.
Yeah.
Which is a great idea, by the way. Let's leave the most vulnerable one for last. Let's make that happen.
Juno comes back. She's the one who's planned this event. She is our Asian character. It's easy to tell who she is. She's the one who was cheating with Sarah's husband behind
supposedly.
Her back. Supposedly. The movie has made it very clear that's what happened, even if we didn't get to see P and the V, okay? Juno comes back, or maybe it's Beth that comes back.
No, it's Juno.
No, I think it is Beth.
It's Juno.
I think it's Juno.
I think it's Beth who comes back and tells her a dirty joke about a lemon.
I mean, that was the joke, but I think Juno tells it.
No, I think Beth tells it. You can look it up. I bet it's Beth. They talk her through, and right as Sarah's like about to wiggle through the last bit of the tiny little crack they're wiggling through,
yeah,
a cave-in starts. And so, oh, it's attention. She's got to wiggle through. She's got to, and she makes it, but now they're all trapped. Rebecca, one of the other characters, says like, oh, don't worry. You know, we told the park rangers or whatever that we're going to be down here.
Right.
When we don't check in with them again in like, you know, in like 6 hours, they're going to send a search party to look for us. And this is when Juno says,
I lied, Teehee.
I lied. I wanted this to be something fun. And this is an unexplored cave system, so I figured we could like chart it out and make it our own.
It's just a prank, bro.
This is the biggest problem with that for me. One, Juno is very, through the beginning of this movie, very like specific about what you do to stay safe in these situations. And the movie has not gone out of its way to imply that she would ever do something this incredibly fucking stupid.
What are you talking about when you say she does? She talks about making stuff safe.
I mean, no, she like
they land in the cave initially. She's all like safety first.
Yeah, exactly. Like she is being very. She's giving good advice for what you would do to do this safely
when they're landing. But if you're talking about like when they're walking up and she's giving a little speech about like, oh, here are some of the risks with caving. Let's make sure we stay together.
Sure,
let's
yeah.
do all that. That's not Juno. That's Rebecca.
I'm talking about when they land in the cave initially.
Sure.
And the movie has not gone out of its way to be like, these girls are extremely adventurous and they do stupid fucking shit all the time.
They've told us that they're very adventurous, but the stuff we've seen them do is whitewater rafting.
Which is not that adventurous.
People die
rafting.
People do, but people do die like getting in their car to go to work. Like
that is not the same as whitewater rafting.
Whitewater rafting is not that dangerous in comparison with like I'm gonna go lead my friends into an uncharted cave and go spelunking in ways
it is
that
like
no one has any kind of
three different orders of magnitude of risk. Where obviously getting into your car every day is the riskiest.
Sure, exactly, and for sure, 100%. No, I mean like
we are all from Tennessee. We're recording this in Nashville. Tennessee is the worst state for whitewater rafting deaths.
Okay.
Probably because we have a ton of whitewater rafting.
Sure.
It's probably inflated because we have a lot more of it. But
the movie is set in Appalachia.
Last year was one of the worst years in terms of number of deaths. We had 9 people die. So yes, some people die whitewater rafting. Mm-hmm. It is not a lot of people. Whitewater rafting, generally speaking, is a risky, but like in the safe kind of risky. It's
exactly.
like skydiving. Skydiving
exactly.
is inherently risky, and you've got someone there who's like, all right, pull the chute at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we just float to the ground.
There's a massive difference between like the equivalent of you jumping out of a plane while you are strapped to someone else who will do all the complicated stuff of like paying attention to when you need to pull the chute and all of that.
Versus
getting in a plane that you are flying and then jumping out of the plane, which is the level of
with
stupidity.
No chute.
Right, with no chute, which is the
level. And also you lied to air traffic control and are in a different plane than you said you would be. Jumping out at a different height than you said you would.
And you tell all your friends that you have parachutes in their backpacks, but actually it's just a tissue.
And as soon as you jump out of the cave, jump out of the plane, there's a cave in behind you, so you can't get back in the plane afterwards.
Right, no. Like, Juno is unexcusably stupid in this moment, to the point
for
where
making
it doesn't...
this plan.
To the point where it's not believable to me that she would.
Sure.
The movie needs to go out of its way to establish that she would do something this incredibly
risky with
her
friends.
I almost agree
with you. I think that it's a stretch to be sure, but having one of their friends basically talk about what a boring cave Juno has signed them up for and how it's going to be boring as shit and she may as well have not come. Like, I've been someone who has planned an event and had people complain about it.
Right.
It is a horrible feeling, and you just want to do something to make it better. So, like, I can at least, it's still completely idiotic, especially the, like, not telling the Rangers where they're going.
Right.
Like, all that good stuff. But I can understand the, like, I'm going to make a change because I want to, like, I want my friends to have a good time, or I want to impress them.
What this
or
feels like is we're on a cruise together, right?
Yeah.
And you're complaining that it's boring, and so I push you over the rail.
it's almost
no. You like steer us toward an iceberg.
We recently had your bachelor party, and for that we went and shot clay pigeons. It would be as though Caleb, on the way there, heard someone complain that I shoot clay pigeons all the time. This
so
is not a big deal.
So he signed us up to be the pigeons.
Exactly. So he started the most dangerous game and had us hunt each other down to murder each other. Like, that's the level of stupidly dangerous thing that Juno does here, and it's just not very believable. But to be fair, the rest of this movie will also not be very believable after these monsters show up.
There's ways, because I even commented, I was like halfway through the movie, I said, you know what, aside from the whole like dumbass decision to come down in this cave in the first place, mm-hmm. I'm impressed at the lack of like the movie continuing due to idiocy, right?
Sure.
Because you've seen those movies where it's like the only reason that the plot is happening the way that it is that our characters don't know how to have a simple conversation with each other.
Right.
Or like they're all making the dumbest decisions possible and not using common sense.
Exactly.
And for the most part, for the first like half of this movie, maybe even the first three quarters, our characters, aside from coming down in the cave in the first place, operated like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's keep talking about the plot a little bit. They come down, there's the cave in, they find out they're in the wrong cave, they're going to have to find a way out.
And then
there's
a tense moment of the ravine.
They get to the ravine.
Yeah.
Rebecca, one of the women that does not stand out in the least, climbs across, and they're able to shuttle everyone else over. Mm-hmm. Juno opts to be the last one, tries to take all their gear with them, and we have a jump scare where she falls,
right?
But she's attached totally by a rope, and so they pull her up, and it's okay.
It's all there to build false tension for the cave horror movie that it's pretending to be there.
Your adrenaline is coming down after that point, but it's still like coming down from being at a pretty high spot.
Yeah.
Right.
And after that,
cortisol doesn't exit your system very quickly,
right?
So your stress levels stay there.
Exactly.
It's not too long after that scene where Sarah goes to get she hears some running water. She goes over and she sees one of our little goblin buddies drinking some water at like a little cave river over there.
For sure.
And this is scary. I talked when we first came back from watching the movie, I talked about how there were like two ways that the goblins were scary and one way that it wasn't,
right?
I talked about the jump scares.
Yeah.
That's kind of a cheap way, but it gets me. The other ways that the goblins are scary are when it's not like the sudden cut and the musical sting jump scare, but where it's the camera slowly pans.
Mm-hmm.
Because this movie does a great job of feeling claustrophobic. I complain all the time about movies being so dark you can't see what's going on.
Yeah.
In this movie, it's oppressively dark the entire time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes sense from a story and thematic perspective. They're in a cave. The only lighting that they're getting is from their flares or from their headlamps. It's a cool, creepy ambiance that works within the story and works just from like a horror movie perspective.
Right. Sure.
But and then you get like the slow head pan and you see like, it just slowly pans to a monster. And that, I don't know why, but that kind of slow pan over to one, it creeps me the hell out.
That's so much more effective that's so much more effective than jump scares. I think that this movie would genuinely...
Because jump scares make you feel annoyed after you've had the jump, you're like, you got me with a jump scare.
I think like one jump scare where a bad thing actually happens during the jump scare of like, it's the first time someone gets attacked and like actually gets bitten. And like at that point, they've already escalated tension pretty high.
Mm.
But most of the jump scares are either it's a completely fake jump scare of like, we played a really loud noise as like one of their friends popped up near them and they weren't expecting it. Or it's one of the monsters, it's close by, we play a loud noise, but it just kind of runs off into the darkness for no goddamn reason at all.
Or they have a tussle on the ground and the monster does a very bad job of actually doing any damage.
Right, exactly. We are supposed to believe that these cave-dwelling orcs will run out into the forest, kill elk and giant wolves,
moose and wolves,
and drag them back to their cave, and yet these skinny ass white chicks can fight them off with almost no difficulty.
The moose can't.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you know, she kills Sarah, our main character, kills several of them with a moose horn.
Yeah.
You know what else is really good at killing things with moose horns? Fucking moose.
Exactly.
He's got them built in.
Mm-hmm. And like, I really like this movie would work a lot better for me if they focused more on there's not a lot of these monsters. We're not like doing the like there's tons of them everywhere, but rather they could be anywhere at any moment. And because the lighting is so dark, you are constantly seeing what you think are them in the background.
And it turns out to be a stalagmite or something.
Exactly. And then you actually have them eat these women when they get close, because these things are
Well, they do eat the women when they get close.
Most of the time.
That's what I was saying before. They do a very bad job of it sometimes, that they don't seem like they're that dangerous.
Right.
They also, like, the logic of them doesn't make too much sense.
Not at all. No.
They're cave creatures, so they're blind. They lost their sight.
They use echolocation.
Despite the fact they go up to the surface to hunt all the time. We're going to ignore that.
Exactly. That is so asinine.
They hunt by sound, but they say by bats, which is echolocation. Mm. And regardless of how it works in nature in real life, the way that movie echolocation has always worked and always will work is you go a little like, ee! And then the sound waves bounce off stuff and you get the little daredevil vision where you can see what's going on, right? These guys don't, like, it's the Jurassic Park T-Rex hunting by sound, where they're just like sitting there waiting for something else to cough.
One of them literally, okay, so
the second thing that you would be most dependent on if you were one of these creatures is touch.
Exactly.
Touch. So go ahead.
And one of the, okay, so at a certain point in this movie, our main character Sarah has been separated from the group, and she is trapped with one of these things in like a bone pit of where clearly they take all their, I guess, bones after they're finished eating, even though
there's
just a
pond of blood down there.
Yeah, there's a literal
pond of blood and a pit of bones, which I guess the goblins have multiple nests around the cave, because this one, it's a shit ton of bones, but it doesn't seem big enough for the number of goblins that we see here in the cave.
And so one of them, she is pressed up against this rock as one of them is coming into the room, and it like puts its hand, not like close to her face, full on her head, all over her hair.
It is John Travolta lovingly patting his son and face off.
It has got its full, like, upper body weight pressed onto her skull against a rock. She's not apparently bothered
and
by how much heavy that would be.
Its arm is 2 inches from a lit torch.
Uh-huh. It apparently does not feel heat. It apparently does not feel hair.
Or it's flesh. Just like, the things that it eats on a constant basis.
Right. Yeah. None of that. And it's just like, no, I'm on top of her. It's fine.
I heard someone three cave systems over go, Sarah! So
exactly.
I'm going to go chase them
down.
I'm going
to scamper off. And okay, that's
my other issue too is if they're this blind, right? Where it doesn't work like echolocation, because they don't. There's plenty of scenes where they're like screaming directly in one of our women's face,
right?
And they don't see him. They just scamper off, look for something else.
Sure.
Right? So it clearly doesn't work like the movie echolocation, where they get like a picture of their surroundings by bouncing sound off.
Sure.
Of it.
Yeah.
If that's the case, how are they moving around this damn like cave system?
Sure. Exactly.
The cave doesn't make noise.
No, exactly.
They'd be running into walls constantly.
It's not as though they're like if these things somehow if they found their way into some sort of subterranean ecosystem where there are all kinds of blind creatures attacking and eating each other, that could work. That could make sense. You could at least
have it be
internally consistent
fish.
With logic. Yeah.
If they're hunting
fish.
The cave fish and there's like giant schools of the cave fish
something
for some
like
reason,
that
right?
Yeah,
if they're
could
pulling
all work.
A golem, right?
Exactly, that could work. But just the more you think about how this system would work, and just the sheer fact that everyone would know, okay, there is this stretch of woods where that is over this cave system where all the animals die at an unusually high rate, or dozens of people die because we see all of their skulls out there, and like these things are clearly not 100% human. They've evolved to be different enough from us that they would not have skulls that look the exact same as
elf
ours.
Ears.
Yeah, they've got fucking elf ears. Their eyes don't.
Their
work the
teeth
same way.
Work different.
Their teeth are like weird
Although I
sharp
will say,
shit.
You
their mouths are not very scary.
You wouldn't see the stuff up top because they make a point of showing that they are dragging they don't eat their prey up top. They drag it down into the cave.
For some reason, yeah.
Right. Oh. Well, they got to be able to bleed it out into the giant blood pit.
I think this movie is banking on you not thinking about any of this because it's being very scary and it has ramped up the tension a lot by the end.
Well, and one of the, because, you know, I talked about there's two ways that they're scary, the jump scares and the slow pans. Mm. The one way they're not scary is during the fights, unfortunately.
Where
because,
like, two girls take on 10 of them with no trouble.
It's not even that, because I would be willing to say that a group of women who go around the world having like physical adventures you know what? It's probably a little unrealistic to fend off all these monsters in a cave, but I bet they'd have a better chance at it than a bunch of like desk jockeys, yeah. Right?
Survival instinct is the thing.
The reason that the monsters aren't scary in these fights is because this is when it's like super clear that it's just a dude with like some makeup on.
Yeah.
And that makes it a lot...
To be fair, it's really good makeup. Like, this isn't like a 60s movie where like it you can... it's clearly Star Trek with like a guy's got a lizard head on.
Mm. But there's one scene specific where like one of the goblins has caught one. I think it's Rebecca maybe. And he's like digging in and eating her tummy and stuff like that.
And you can tell he's not biting anything.
I can tell that like he's not biting. He's just grabbing the makeup like effects that are already there.
Yeah.
And so it just, so... It's hard to not get the image of just like him just like nuzzling. He's like, like you would do like your dog when they're laying on their back or something.
Or imagine how awkward some of these scenes, like the screaming in her face would be earlier without the sound effects that go along with it. And he's just like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm willing to give you Juno. Juno seems like she is someone who is very fit. She does this adventuring shit constantly.
Maybe she's done some martial arts.
Yeah, I could totally believe that she is at least dangerous to take on one, maybe two of these things since she has the advantage of sight. Like, I would also give it
to Rebecca because she showed us some physical strength by climbing over the chasm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She doesn't stand out, as we said, but she's at least shown she's got some physical prowess to her.
Someone who's doing that kind of thing. Our main character, though, her main characteristic is depression. And I don't get the feeling that over the past, like, year...
I've got the power of climbing picks and Zoloft on my side.
Exactly. I don't get the impression that...
And she hasn't seen any of the rest of them for a year, so she's probably just been, like, laying in bed, scrolling Twitter.
Exactly.
They make a point for her of showing her, like, taking some of her depression pills and then leaving it. And I was like, surely this is going to come up later when she's, like, in the cave and she's like, oh, no, I need my... nicotine or whatever, my morphine tablets. I don't have them. I'm addicted. Something, but now she's just like, I guess taking a dunk in that blood pit really was what she needed to shock herself back to the.
I get to the peak of physical fitness.
I guess, 'cause
like, I don't know about you guys, but I don't think that a lot of like people who are like their main characteristic is depression are known for like getting to the gym and slamming their 5x5 workout.
Right.
Like, I don't feel like I'm confident in my ability to take on 5 Nightcrawler monsters
in the middle
at
of a
once
cave,
in the middle of a cave
by headlamp light,
by and, torchlight.
And she's obviously not over the death of her family members and all of her friends.
She's constantly hallucinating them throughout the movie.
And all of her friends are dying around her. So it seems like this would be a character who would have to struggle with just giving up at a moment like this.
Exactly.
You are in the belly of the beast. She's literally in hell.
Because let's talk about... So we're moving on. Because at this point, it's basically the monsters have come upon them. They get separated. And now it's just... They're each trying to find their way back to the group and out to an entrance while dodging these monsters who are attacking them based on sound.
There's the part with Beth.
Right. So but even that is encapsulated in the rest of the movie, right? There's no like, oh, and this major plot thing happens next. It's like, okay, here's a different scene of them still trying to avoid the monsters. Right. So we can just talk about the rest of this as a clump now. There's a scene where the crew gets attacked by some of these crawlers, some of these goblins. And Sarah falls down a hole.
Our main character.
She falls down a hole and gets knocked out.
Yeah.
Juno, or Holly, the super adventurous 90s lesbian girl, she has already fallen and broken her bone. Mm-hmm. And so she's not able to defend herself. She gets killed by one of the monsters.
Right.
And the monster is trying to drag her away to their bone pit to eat her. And Juno's like, no, I gotta save my friend's corpse.
She's trying to fight him off. Yeah.
Yeah. So she kills it. Juno successfully kills the goblin that's trying to grab her. Mm. But then she hears something behind her, whips around, and just... It's a climbing thing. She just picks
it. Literally
Beth
goes in
through the neck.
It goes through the back of her neck, where her spine is.
It's not
very
a
clearly,
small graze,
and comes out the front of her neck. And she like gurgles and falls to the ground. And any sane human being would go, "Okay, I have murdered my friend. I'm gonna get the fuck out." Because there's monsters here. I clearly cannot save this person that
I
accidentally murdered.
There's monsters here. I'm racked with guilt. I've gotta get out. I'm not going to try and like do CPR on my friend with the axe through the neck.
Right.
Because
exactly.
My other friend just got disemboweled over here. This is probably gonna happen again in about 5 minutes.
Important point, as Beth is dying, due to axe through the neck, she like
steals.
She like hands sliding down Juno's front, and she steals a necklace,
right,
which we later find out was a gift from Sarah's husband.
Is later implied to be.
Yeah.
Like.
So Beth is dead. We go back to our main character, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, you know, wakes up in the bone pit. She's got a...
She's crawling around.
She goes for a swim.
She somehow makes an everlasting torch.
Mm-hmm. She finds a random,
like, water bottle looking thing. A canteen
full of gasoline or oil.
That happens to be full of, like, pitch.
Well, no. To be fair, they have, because they found remnants of previous spelunkers who've gotten lost and killed in here.
Mm.
They find old climbing equipment across the chasm. They find an old like climbing helmet with like the kind where like it's a headlamp, but you'd put like a little candle in there instead of a light bulb. It was an orc helmet.
It was straight up an orc helmet.
It was an Uruk-hai's helmet from the pit of Helm's Deep or wherever. And so they found this different stuff. I guess it looks like a water bottle to me, and then she just lights. She like douses some rags to light it on fire.
I assume
it was not clear that it was like more old gear.
Also, she just smacks some random rocks together. It kind of looks like there's some metal involved somewhere in there, but it's not like it's clear that she has flint and tinder to make a fire.
After she lights the torch on fire, she's got the torch, she's got a weapon, right? And one of the monsters has dragged Beth's dead body down here to the bone pile to eat.
And left it there. I will snack on this later. Tonight after I watch some TV show on Netflix, I'm going to be hungry.
There's Beth's dead body. There's a moose that hasn't been eaten yet. There's half of a wolf.
Sure.
So
yeah.
They don't eat all of it in one go, but sure, whatever, right? Beth is apparently still alive. How?
Blood is still spilling out of her mouth.
Just rapidly. Gushing. Like, it's not like it's a little bit of blood. Like, it's an amount of blood that one would assume you'd be dead in seconds from.
Right.
And Beth is, like, lucid and, like, clearly able to talk.
Never mind.
Somehow, like, despite having a pickaxe through her windpipe.
Right. There is a hole in her throat as well as in her neck.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there is literally no way this character should be alive at this point.
And she says, Juno did this. She
can't be trusted?
She attacked me and then left me for dead. She can't be trusted.
Which is not also the scene that happened.
Also, here's a necklace. It belonged to Paul. She slept with your husband.
Like, if this movie had established, like, that this character had a grudge against Juno for some reason.
Because there's clearly, this character knows something. She's the one who's looking aside disapprovingly earlier on.
Right.
But there's no, like, clear tension between her and Juno because of it. Like, they still seem like good friends. It's
exactly.
Just like, she's a good friend who disapproves of some of Juno's actions, right?
Exactly,
it's not like, my friendship with Juno ended.
Right. Like, if this character was someone had previously cheated on, like, with her husband as well before the other cheating, that would establish why
that's
she would
That's the
whole
reason Juno's in the group. She just sleeps with all of the husbands.
right, yeah. Like, that would establish enough of a reason for, is this Beth? Is she the one who's dying, Beth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would establish enough reason for Beth to be like, Juno can't be trusted. She is clearly cheating on... She was cheating with your husband before he died.
Let's talk about this pendant that she hands her. Because it's not a pendant that's like, hey,
extremely
Juno,
unique.
I should like fucking you behind my wife's back. Love, Paul. It basically says like live, laugh, love on it. There is no reason.
From a gift shop.
I mean, movie-wise, we know that it's true, right? Because we saw the scenes earlier on where there's the disapproving look, and Paul came and like helped her out of her life jacket.
I think
whatever.
This is the second time that this like sentence has been like used in this connection. Yeah,
but in movie, Beth hands our main character Sarah.
A necklace.
A necklace that says live, laugh, love. And she's like, Paul used to say live, laugh, love. Oh, Juno, that bitch.
Yeah, exactly.
I hate her now.
Meanwhile, through all of this, Juno has at every turn, other than the one moment where
she's been a badass who's looking out for her friends.
She understandably made a terrible mistake when she murdered Beth. But
it was an accident. She whipped around thinking that there was another monster behind
her. It was a clear accident. It wasn't like Beth was like, I'm going to tell Sarah about what happened between you and her husband.
Right.
It was just like,
not if I get to you first,
exactly. Like, that would work, and that would fit the ending that Juno gets through through the movie. Instead, Juno is at like every turn, like trying to keep the group together, trying to like save people, trying to find people so she can help them. Literally going into hand-to-hand combat with underground orcs
repeatedly
to save her friends.
And then the movie's like wholesale ass. Bitch.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing at it.
Well, no, it's not just. Sarah doesn't just say like, well, fuck this bitch. Because later on, she's done the whole like, oh, I'm going to be quiet and kill some monsters here and then sneak away over here. And
right, right.
Finally, the group gets back together just in time for our other two like
characters
we don't care
brutally.
About. Yeah, Rebecca
and Sam. In front
of Sam.
Juno. Like, Juno's trying to save them both when it happens, but there's just nothing she can do.
Right. Mm. Sarah and Juno reunite. They're close to an exit. And Sarah's like...
They don't know that, though. Like,
right.
They
but there's 5 minutes left in the movie, so we know, we know what's happening.
Right, right.
Sarah turns to Juno. She's like, hey, so what happened with Beth again? And Juno's like, I mean, she died. Like, it was horrible. Well, I was distraught. And
I mean,
Sarah's like, are you sure she died in front of you?
I mean, it's not even like that. Like, earlier in the movie, she makes it clear that one of their friends, that Holly was eaten by the monsters.
Yeah.
And then she says that Beth died. Like, she's not clear about it. It's obvious that she feels incredible guilt about it, and that like she could at any moment be like, okay, look, this is the terrible, horrible accident that happened. I didn't mean for it to, but like she came up against me in the dark and I didn't know and I killed her.
Yeah. But she wasn't forthright, so she should die.
Right. Like it's not giving us any reason to think that Juno is anything but a person who made a horrible mistake in cheating on her friend with her friend's husband and in leading them into this place, but since then has done nothing but try to make up for it and try
She's
to
done her
save
best. Yeah.
everyone right. who's there.
By no means is it premeditated homicide.
Right. Meanwhile, Sarah's just like giving her the stank eye of like, you fucked my husband a year ago. I'm a murder ya.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about it because so Beth is there. She tells this. I'm going back a little bit because we didn't talk about one of my favorite parts of the movie. Beth has just told Sarah what's going on. Mm. Sarah's like, all right, I'll get us out of here. And Beth clearly is not going to make it. She's been stabbed through the neck with an axe.
Yeah.
And so she's like, Sarah, just don't leave me here. End me. Right.
I apparently am not going to die from these injuries.
Now, Sarah,
these catastrophic wounds to my body are not enough to
hurt me. It'll take too long for me to bleed out. I don't think I can last another 30 seconds. Kill me before then.
And I'm far too lucid still.
Yeah. Sarah, we know, has a knife. She used it to make the torch.
She cut some
bandages. She wrapped it around. Clearly has this knife.
Beth's neck is already destroyed.
Rick, if I'm laying there and I'm dying and you've got a knife and I say, just finish, end me, kill me, right?
right.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do to finish me quickly and as painlessly as possible?
What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the knife that I have and I am going to carefully set it aside so I don't cut myself. And then I'm going to find a rock and slam it into your head.
And just bash your head in with it.
Once. I'm not going to make sure that you die.
Oh,
I'm just gonna hit you once with a rock with my twiggy little British lady arms and then run away and jump into the closest vial of blood that I can find.
Just slit her throat. Her throat is already like gushing blood. Just make it gush more. Cut the like veins on the side of the neck.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Last thing you
do all of the above. Get the neck, get the wrist.
Go for the heart. Like, just stab her in the heart.
I mean, it wasn't a very long knife, but you know what? She should have still tried.
Right, for sure. It was literally an extremely sharp knife.
It's almost as dumb as if Beth is there, like, Sarah, don't let me die. Kill me. Or, like, don't leave me here. Like, finish me before they can,
don't let them come eat me alive.
And then Sarah's like, okay, I'll do this for you. You know, I hate that I have to kill my friend, but sure. I know you've got a serious nut allergy here. Have my peanut butter and jelly. Like, it's that level of dumb.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
It's so stupid.
Puts the peanut butter into the hole in her neck. This will close up the wound, Beth.
So Sarah gets that kill. Fast forward back to where we were. She's confronting Juno. And Juno says, like, yeah, Beth died in front of me. And so Sarah knows. She's like, oh. And you can tell in her eyes, she's like made up her mind, like, this bitch.
Even though the movie is very clear of like, yeah, Juno would have thought she died in front of her. I watched that scene and thought
Beth was dead.
100%.
I thought she died in front of Juno the first moment. Like,
oh my gosh. And then they like go like 10 feet further into the cave, and they see light, they see an exit, and they also see like like three or four of the goblins sitting there, and
just
they're like
chilling,
and
like,
they're like cover album pose, like exactly. Sitting there getting ready to
doing
drop
the slob squat.
Yeah, they're getting ready to drop the sickest beats. And then there's what's probably the least satisfying fight, because
it's
supposed
jerky.
To be cool, right? Because it's these two who.
It's the two badasses.
Juno
of the group
is
now.
Believable. Sarah has, you know, she's.
She's killed a bunch of them already.
She's killed a bunch of them. So we're, you know, we're on her side. She's our main character.
She's turned animal from being left in the cave
right.
for too long.
Right. These are our two survivors. And it's now, instead of like basically a one on one or a one on two, it's the two of them against. We only see three, but then it pans over and there's more. So maybe like 10.
Right.
We don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell because the movie then decides to go to a ton of like jump cuts and
shaky cam.
And,
yeah. It's
and
a terribly edited fight scene.
Right. So I already said that in the movie, they've only been lighting the movie by the natural light that would be there, right? Yeah. Whether it's, you know, some of them have like some serious glow sticks that they crack. So you get this real like
at least
neon
in
green
theory.
Light.
Like
right?
That's what the movie is trying to imply. Like it's
right.
clear
it's
there's extra
that.
Light, but it's not a lot.
There's lights from the headlamps. Mm-hmm. There's lights from these red flares that they're tearing off, right? And so when they get up to this final fight, when it's Juno and Sarah here at this final fight, Sarah has... Earlier in one of her other fights with one of the goblins, fallen into a pool of blood. So she's just covered in blood head to toe. Juno is wearing a large red vest. Right. And the scene is lit with red flares.
Uh-huh.
So not only is there shaky cam, a ton of jump cuts, action where they're rolling and diving and jumping.
Very
goblins
close
that
up
all
them.
Look the same.
Goblins that all look the same. Tons of Dutch angles being thrown in there along with it because
right,
the movie
right.
loves the Dutch angle. And then everything is lit red and both of our characters' primary color is red.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible to tell what's going on, who's fighting who.
Right. How many people are being, how many goblin monsters are being murdered?
We can tell that a number of them are being murdered, but we don't know how many more are waiting in the wings. We
right,
don't
right.
know what the overall threat is. So this final big climactic fight between them is... really lackluster just because it's hard to tell what's going on.
Right, right, right.
And so we have this big fight scene. They're about to make it out. And that's when Sarah looks back and sees Juno. And does she even say anything?
No, not a word. She just slowly raises the sickle.
Mm-hmm. No, she raises the sickle in one hand and Paul's necklace in the other.
Right, right, right.
And then Juno just looks at her and she's like, no. And then Sarah... So I thought that Sarah was going to have some, because she's our main character, right? And you've got to keep her
she's
like,
she's a
oh,
good person.
She's a noble one. She's fighting for her friends and to escape. And
right,
so
right.
maybe like Juno's being eaten and it's a choice between self-preservation and saving Juno. And she chooses self-preservation. So there's still that plausible deniability. We can still root for her, right?
Mm.
Like she's still the good guy. No, she just like, she murks Juno in the knee
she
with this climbing
pick. She buries
pick.
That sickle into her kneecap. And then just leaves her.
As Juno is screaming like, and these things come in swarmer.
Cold-blooded.
Right, right, right. Like, it is very frustrating because the movie has gone out of its way to portray Juno as a extremely heroic character.
Yes.
Like, it feels like the villain won in
this
moment.
Well, and someone who's overcome, like, because she's depressed for... Or are you talking about Juno or Sarah?
Juno.
Juno is heroic. She's trying to save her friends for this entire thing.
Yeah. Right.
Sarah is someone who's like
she's
was
been,
bogged down and then overcame it to like find some inner strength kind
right,
of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But she's been separated from her from the rest of them for most of the movie. And mm-hmm. so like she hasn't been able to have those heroic moments of like, okay, I'm going to triumph over these monsters and save my friends. Any of that. Juno's gotten all of those moments. So when Sarah like betrays her, it's this like, that's the main reason that I feel like this movie is leaning hard into like the real monsters where people are along, because even Juno had this moment of like weakness and fucked her friend's husband, and so that's what led to this entire ending of treachery and bullshit.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then Sarah climbs out. She makes
over
it back.
A pile of giant bones.
As
we hear like
dramatic pile of bones.
Yeah,
we
it's
hear
a pretty
Juno
cool
dying.
Scene as yeah. she's. There's a impossibly large amount of bones in
right.
this scene that she's crawling over. We finally see some daylight for the first time in like an hour.
She has to like force her way out through like
she is birthed from the mountain.
I love how when she gets back to the car, she does what the actual reaction would be, which is just floor it.
Yeah.
Just pedal to the metal. She's like checking the back seat repeatedly to make sure none of these things followed her. I love how paranoid she is when she gets out. There's not like this serene ending to this horror movie.
Right, right.
And then as she's there, like
she finally gets to the side of the road. She pulls over to rest
to like let the adrenaline die down. And then she like vomits out the car door, and as she sits back up, there's Juno's. She's hallucinating Juno because she's been hallucinating her husband and her daughter. I take that to mean now like she somehow felt some guilt for her family's death. Now she's got to add Juno's death to that as well.
Right, right.
She actually hasn't overcome her demons.
Right.
Interesting note is that there's a different ending in the UK that I like a little bit more. Go ahead and tell us about that ending.
So following the events of the US ending, so right after she sees the hallucination of Juno sitting in the car, Sarah awakens back in the cave after hallucinating her escape. She sits up to see Jessica sitting across from her holding a birthday
cake. Who was her
cake.
Daughter.
Right,
who
right.
she'd been hallucinating this entire time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As Sarah smiles, the shot widens to reveal that the cake's birthday candlelight is actually the light of her torch. The camera slowly pulls back as the crawlers are heard closing in on Sarah, revealing that she is still trapped in the cave, and that's the ending. And I think that's
I would
honestly
have liked that so much more.
It's significantly better because the ending it on like the hallucination of Juno just feels so cheap. Like
if they had just skipped that one last part, I could have dealt a lot better.
Sure, like just have it end with like her. She vomits out the window and just sits back
and
in her car.
She's driving just, you know, on the country roads. It pans away and we see the sunrise or
something like that.
That.
Yeah, it feels weird.
You got to have one last jump scare.
Yeah, like, and it's one that's meaningless. Like because that would clearly only be a hallucination.
Right.
And so it's sort of like it was a dream all along type of ending. It's not, but it kind of is. Of just like, here's a final scare that is a fake out scare because clearly this isn't something that's real within the world of this movie.
Mm. Right. Juno didn't actually make it out with
her. Which would be actually scary. Like if somehow Juno like you see Juno like drive out in the other car and like pull up next to her and stare her down, like that would be an entirely different ending.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, like I agree. The UK ending seems to be the much better one to me.
Let me start with our final thoughts.
Sure.
We've been going for a while. We'll loop around and end with Caleb since it was your pick tonight, bud. I hate scary movies. I jumped and was creeped out at multiple points in this movie.
You wouldn't watch parts of the movie?
Oh, no, it was creepy. And there was a part where a bone, like where Holly broke a bone and it stuck out
through
her leg.
The worst part of this was a compound fracture for you.
I hated it. Ah, it was so gross.
That was really good special effects.
But by the end of the movie, the scariness had kind of worn off.
Yeah.
Just because that's when, you know, they ruin the tension by poor camera work.
Right.
Yeah.
And, or poor camera directing, I guess.
Poor camera directing and poor, like, use of monster.
Yeah, right. They're trying to make it scary by giving you close-ups on them. But what it seems like it mostly just did is that it pulled the curtain back too far.
Exactly.
And now I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, being able to just see the dudes in the orc costumes wiggling around, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much. Man, I hate watching these scary movies, though. Like, screw you both for making me watch this. My favorite part of the movie, just for pure comedic effect, is Sarah deciding to kill Beth with a big rock instead of the knife that she had. Like, very clearly, we know that she has this knife. She even uses it later to, like, stab one of the monsters.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, we know that she's got this.
Right.
It's just so dumb and so funny. My least favorite part is the scary monsters in the compound bone fracture. It was scary and gross, and I didn't like seeing it. Overall, the movie, I had a horrible time watching this movie, but the movie itself, I think, was made pretty well. Judging the movie on its own merits, I'd probably give it like a 3.5. But I didn't have fun watching this, and I don't want to watch it again. So I'll give it a 1.5 half-eaten moose carcasses out of 5, because I don't like scary movies. Screw you guys.
You're so salty.
Screw you. We're doing another Wes Anderson month because of this.
No, there's not going to be a yearly Wes Anderson month.
There
fuck
better
that.
Be. Wes Anderson March.
Fuck that.
But in December.
Two.
Wes Anderson month two, the electric spookaloo.
So this was not the movie I was thinking it was going in, and I'm glad about that because this is a much better movie than the one that I remembered. I think that my favorite part of this movie is probably the first half of it. I think that's when the tension is the highest. The movie is still the most believable to me. Mm. I think that overall, I think that whole section pretty much right up until the first like fight with Juno killing the monster and killing her friend, all of that works and feels extremely believable. And even when there's a monster like that appears, because it's like in the distance and you know you don't get a good clear look at it for a while, all of that feels like that doesn't break my suspension of disbelief. My favorite part of the movie is probably just that whole section. I think that all works well. There's a specific moment where the cave-in happens where it just feels incredibly tense there. Like you really feel the claustrophobia. Mm. And I think that the sets and all that is really what makes that work. And so that's my favorite part of it is the set direction and like just the visuals of this movie. My least favorite part of the movie is centered on the giant pool of blood. And what my really least favorite thing about this movie is the unbelievableness of the monsters the moment you give it even the slightest bit of thought. Because the first half of this movie was very grounded in its horror. The second half is absolutely not. And this giant pit of blood is what really, I think, made me start thinking, no, this doesn't make any goddamn sense. These things would be well known. Like, there's no way that they would be, like, hidden this way. There is no way that they would be able to sustain a population underground. They wouldn't evolve a lack of sight when they clearly hunt above ground. There's so many things about it that you give a moment's thought.
They hunt by noise above ground, where it's well known that there's less noise above ground than there is in a cave.
Exactly. There's no reason for this insane bullshit of a story. And the movie gives us too much to think about and shows us too much for that to work. If it had stayed much more like monster movie and kept the monsters to like you only get to see them for a brief second and like they grab something and run, that would work much better. But because we get such clarity on what they are, what they do, how they operate, none of it works and none of it makes sense to me. At the beginning of this movie, I talked about how I laughed at the end of Hereditary, and it sort of had the same problem. That movie started off extremely grounded and grew into a very, very silly ending to me. This movie is the exact same way of like it is leaning too hard into the like our audience is going to be pumping adrenaline, and so they're not going to notice all these weird flaws that we've thrown up at the screen. And so
there's ways of doing it well.
Absolutely, yeah. That you can totally make that work. This movie did not, for me at least. But I still think it's a lot of fun, and I think it's a very solid horror movie. So I am going to give it a 3.5 giant pools of inexplicable blood out of 5.
Fair enough. All right, Caleb, you happy with your pick? I know you're debating between this one and like The Mist or something like that.
I have to say that I am satisfied with my pick, although nothing ever ages as well as you wish it did.
Sure.
Right, yeah.
But with that being said, this was a frightening experience to go through again.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite thing about this movie is the atmosphere that they build.
Mm.
And in some movies, they take such a long time creating that atmosphere that they lose me.
Yeah.
I start to get bored and I'm just like, come on, I just want to start seeing the viscera spraying.
Right.
Can we get to the action, please?
Yeah.
But they did a decent enough job with the character interaction, even though I started to forget who everyone was relatively quickly, to keep me interested. And it's like, oh, there's the flashbacks. There's also the claustrophobia of now they're stuck inside of here. And the scene, especially with the ravine and how they just crank up that adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And it sets the stage for the entire rest of the craziness that follows afterwards.
Yeah.
I think they did a great job with that. The monsters are my least favorite part for all the reasons that you said, Rick. When it comes to having a creature feature, you want to draw out the horror of this unknown entity as long as you possibly can.
Right.
And when they have these close-ups, and also just they seem rather inept when it comes to physical combat, when you're a humanoid, this is how you hunt.
These things are clearly extremely muscular.
Right. You can capture wolves. You can overcome moose.
You can climb upside down on cave ceilings.
Right. Mm-hmm. And like you occasionally score the good critical hit and you can open up someone's neck. But the rest of the time, it's like, these are skinny white women. Why do you seem so inept?
Right, right. Why is it so hard for you to kill them?
And so that's where they start to lose me. And just their sheer numbers and how ineffective they are, that takes me out of the horror element mm-hmm. of this movie. I still enjoyed it quite a bit, though.
Mm-hmm.
So with all that being said, I think that...
Do you have a favorite and least favorite?
Well, specific moments would be the ravine would be my favorite.
And the problems with the monsters your least?
Yeah. But okay. Also, like, I just generally like the atmosphere that they made.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
also my favorite.
That's fair.
So, all in all, I think I would give this movie, I think, 3 weird, excessively large femurs out of 5.
Moose femurs.
I don't know. That seemed like that was a giant of toenail or something like that.
Right, right, right.
Fair enough.
I'm kind of sad that none of us gave it a blank out of live, laugh, love bracelets out of 5.
A live, laugh out of a live, laugh, love?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know where else you can live, laugh, and love?
Oh, my gosh.
At Hobby Lobby.
Our podcast.
Found on opinionatedpodcast.com. Additionally, we're on social media at OpinionCast on Twitter and OpinionatedPodcast on Facebook. Feel free to reach out to us at our email, opinionatedmoviereviews@gmail.com. We always love hearing from you guys, whether it's your thoughts on our episodes or suggestions for what we should watch next. If you get a chance, please leave us a rating on iTunes and follow us on Spotify. Between that and you sharing us with your friends is the best way we have of getting out to new listeners. We always appreciate you guys listening. And until next time,
we're opinionated.
Thanks for listening.